It's March 1976, and a regular enters a dive bar in Jonesboro, Arkansas. The bartender smiles as the man hops onto a bar stool.
Hey, Kurt. Usual?
Yep, Schlitz as always, man.
The bartender starts to hand it over, but suddenly stops. He takes a closer look at the amber brew and sees thousands of tiny specks floating in the normally clear liquid.
Not this again. I had the same problem with another Schlitz barrel. Must be something wrong with the entire batch. Kurt, you want something else?
I guess. Give me a Miller Lite.
As the bartender dumps the tainted Schlitz, he makes a mental note to complain to the wholesaler first thing tomorrow. But the wholesaler already knows. So do Schlitz executives in Milwaukee. The company's under siege from complaints that its beer looks hazy or speckled. Some people even say they see mucus floating in it. And that's why Schlitz's top brass are holding a crisis meeting this very minute. The marketing chief is seriously rattled. He's leading the desperate battle to stop Miller from replacing Schlitz as America's number two brewery. The last thing he needs is to lose loyal customers.
What the hell is this gunk in our beer? Is it even safe to drink?
The vice president of operations responds.
It's totally safe. It's just proteins clotting together. That happens naturally over time. Our stabilizers normally prevent it.
The marketing chief narrows his eyes.
Hang on. Didn't you change the stabilizer recently?
The operations executive gets defensive.
Yeah, but we tested it thoroughly. It's not the stabilizer. It's got to be something else.
Well, whatever it is, figure it out fast before it sinks us.
I'm on it. I'll hire an outside lab to investigate.
Suddenly, Schlitz's chief executive, Robert Eline, who's been listening quietly, intervenes.
Oh, no, you won't. Word of this can't get out. We'll investigate this ourselves.
The marketing chief pushes back.
But it'll be quicker if I said no.
Orders given, the executives file out knowing they need a solution and fast. Not only is Miller snapping at their heels, but they're missing a golden opportunity to grab market share from Budweiser. And that's because Anheuser-Busch's new boss is at war with his own workers. And the Teamsters know exactly where to strike to inflict maximum pain.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. On the last episode, Miller brought light beer into the mainstream while August Busch III dethroned his father and became CEO of Anheuser-Busch. But now, August III must act fast to stop Miller's march to victory. This is Episode 4, Miller Killers. It's late March, 1976, and there's a picket line of several hundred strikers at the gates of Anheuser-Busch's huge brewery in St. Louis. Workers have been striking for almost a month, demanding the company stop any further automation of its bottling plants. Since then, all of the company's plants have gone offline, and 8,000 workers are idle. But today, strikebreakers are about to cross the picket lines. 800 people, typists, accountants, middle managers, and others from the company's corporate offices approach the brewery. As strikers jeer and shout outside the gates, the scabs nervously brush past the picket line and through the brewery gates. Watching the scene from a window on the executive floor are August III and his bespectacled deputy, Denny Long. After the last strikebreaker makes it through, Long turns to his boss and smiles.
I think that went well.
Agreed. No violence or anyone backing out. After they learn the ropes, how much beer can we expect them to make?
Maybe half our usual output, if we're lucky. But the month's supply of beer we've stockpiled means we should be able to stay in the market until the strike ends.
Good. Guess now we wait to see how the Teamsters react.
He won't have to wait long. The union is furious. Union workers picket the railroad tracks leading into the brewery, hindering the delivery of raw materials. They hold sit-ins at the gates to stop trucks hauling beer from leaving the premises. The Teamsters also call on the public to boycott Anheuser-Busch brews until the strike ends. Other unions show support by protesting outside bars and liquor stores in St. Louis that stock the company's Budweiser, Michelob, and Busch beers. By late April, the stakes are rising. The strike is costing the company hundreds of thousands of dollars a day. But August the 3rd sticks to his guns. Talks between management and the union stall, and then the dispute turns violent. A man charges through the Anheuser-Busch Company parking lot in St. Louis. He's swinging a baseball bat. He skids to a halt and lifts his bat high above his head over a mustard-yellow Toyota Celica and smashes in the windshield. He spins around and slams the bat down onto the hood of the neighboring Dodge Coronet. Security guards chase him, but he sprints away. Elsewhere in the city, renegade strikers throw bricks through the windows of liquor stores, bars, and restaurants that stock Budweiser. There's also trouble at the Anheuser-Busch Brewery in Jacksonville, Florida. Shots are fired at a truck as it enters the site. The next day, someone fires a rifle at the brewery's electrical substation, causing a blackout and forcing it to turn on its emergency power generators. Soon after, someone firebombs the home of a strikebreaker. But the striker's resolve is already collapsing. They need their paychecks. In mid-May, workers at the New Jersey brewery take the stock options and pay rise they were offered before the strike and get back to work. By late May, their colleagues in St. Louis have done the same. On June 7th, the strike ends completely. The 95-day walkout has cost Anheuser-Busch tens of millions of dollars in lost earnings and 4% of its market share. August the 3rd feels it was a price worth paying to weaken the union's grip on the company. But his victory has left the company divided. It's July 1976, and Denny Long is in August the 3rd's office in St. Louis. August's deputy is back from a tour of the company's facilities to share his assessment of the workforce's mood.
Morale is bad. The unionized workers no longer feel part of the business.
August the 3rd suspected as much.
Is this just because of the strike?
It's deeper. No, they feel there's an us versus them attitude now.
Huh. Any ideas on how to get them back on our side?
We need everyone working as hard as they can to stop Miller. Maybe remind them that all our jobs are on the line if Miller wins. I was thinking we could give out T-shirts with the phrase, I am a Miller killer.
Huh. Yeah. I like that. Do it.
Within weeks, Anheuser-Busch plants are full of employees wearing white tees with the words, I am a Miller killer, slapped across their chest in bright Budweiser red.
demonizing Miller turns out to be a powerful motivator. For little more than the cost of a few thousand t-shirts, productivity levels start rising. While Anheuser-Busch shifts to a war footing, the chemists at Schlitz have finally uncovered what's causing flakes to form in the company's beer. The problem is the new stabilizer. It's reacting with another stabilizer in the beer, which maintains the foam. The company decides to solve the problem by ditching the foam stabilizer. But the move backfires big time. After 15 years of skimping on ingredients, Schlitz's beer contains too little barley and hops to produce foam without a stabilizer. And the result is flat beer. Drinkers have already been dumping Schlitz, and by fall 1976, the company is in a tailspin. Its reputation is ruined, its marketing confused, and its brew still unfixed. On top of all of that, federal regulators are investigating the company for tax violations and giving kickbacks to retailers and distributors in order to shut out its competitors. Then, Schlitz boss Robert Eline is diagnosed with acute leukemia. He dies 2.5 weeks later. His legacy is a brewery in terminal decline, a company with a broken reputation, no succession plan, a mountain of debt, and federal agents on its back. With Schlitz going down in flames, Miller cruises into the number two spot. In just 4 years, Miller's gone from the eighth largest brewery in America to the company ready to challenge Anheuser-Busch. Miller isn't yet capable of producing more beer than its top rival, but it's breaking ground on new plants fast enough to make August the 3rd extremely nervous. So, as 1977 begins, Anheuser-Busch launches a light beer called Natural Light to take on Miller Lite.
When you're thirsting for a beer or two, but what you're doing isn't through, that's the time to take a natural break.
Anheuser-Busch Natural Light. Brewed naturally with nothing artificial to give you a crisp, refreshing beer that won't fill you up, so it won't slow you down.
Natural Light is no Miller killer, but it does well enough to slow the light train down. Miller responds with a counterattack on Michelob, which is Anheuser-Busch's highest margin beer, marketed at upscale beer drinkers. To take on Michelob, Miller's bought the rights to produce the 700-year-old German lager Löwenbräu in the U.S. The plan is to lure highbrow drinkers away from Michelob on the back of Löwenbräu's reputation as an imported beer.
Eddie, I know exactly what I want. I want the biggest steak you've got and a bottle of Löwenbräu. Steak and Löwenbräu. Dolan, you're a genius.
When you want the taste of a truly great beer, tonight, let it be Löwenbräu.
But Miller's hopes for Löwenbräu are about to be dashed. It's August 1977, and in St. Louis, Anheuser-Busch's public relations and legal chiefs are telling August the 3rd how they plan to take down Löwenbräu. The PR chief goes first.
Löwenbräu is no import. We need to let people know it's brewed in Texas, not Munich. The real Löwenbräu only uses water, barley, hops, and yeast. We'll make sure people know Miller adds corn grits.
The legal chief weighs in.
Miller's downplaying how Löwenbräu is brewed right here in America. They want people to think they're buying a German import, so we're going to file a complaint with the Federal Trade Commission accusing Miller of misleading advertising. At the same time, we'll send complaints to the media. I reckon once the highfalutin rich crowd that Löwenbräu targets learns the truth about what they're drinking, they'll be outraged.
August the 3rd doesn't smile very often, but this plan's good enough to make even his ruler's straight lips curl upwards.
This is good. Really good.
August the 3rd turns to the legal boss.
What do you think the Federal Trade Commission will do to Miller?
Oh, the complaint won't go anywhere. We're just doing it to get the media to run the story.
Oh, well, still, good plan.
Soon after, Anheuser-Busch's Löwenbräu dossier lands on the desks of hundreds of American journalists. A flood of newspaper articles follow, killing Löwenbräu's sales momentum and saddling the lager with a phony image. Miller's 2 years of planning an $11 million ad campaign go up in smoke. It's the first big setback for Miller since Philip Morris bought the business nearly a decade earlier. And August the 3rd is determined it won't be the last blow he inflicts on his Milwaukee rival.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind.
It's late summer 1977, and August the 3rd has summoned Anheuser-Busch's senior marketing team to his office. He's got a new plan for stopping Miller.
What sports do we currently sponsor?
The executives look at their feet. He's not going to like the answer. Eventually, the head of marketing replies.
We don't really sponsor anything. Miller owns the biggies. The World Series, Monday Night Football on ABC, the Indy 500... Stanley Cup.
What?
I get the picture. You don't need to list all of your failures.
How the hell did this happen?
He glares at the head of marketing.
They're expensive sponsorships. We felt the prices were excessive.
August the 3rd is angry. How could his team miss this? The very crowd they're trying to reel in, 18 to 30-year-old men, love watching sports. Letting Miller dominate TV sports is not an option.
Get me the details on every sporting event and team in this country. I want to know what sponsorships are available and how much they cost. I don't care if it's the Super Bowl or the college water polo team. Put everything on that list and get it to me by next week.
It's 2 weeks later. And Anheuser-Busch has commandeered the ballroom of a hotel near Williamsburg, Virginia. The room looks ready for a telethon. August the 3rd and his deputy, Denny Long, sit at the top table. Anheuser-Busch's marketing team and media buyers sit at dozens of surrounding tables. On each table are beige telephones and copies of the 6-inch thick sports sponsorship Bible compiled by the marketing team. It contains names, phone numbers, and cost of sponsoring of every sports team and event in the country. August the 3rd raises his copy in the air and addresses his troops.
Now, over the next 4 days, we're going through every single opportunity in this book, line by line. And
If it makes sense, we're buying whatever's available. I want us to plant our flag wherever sports fans are found. And when Miller's current deals come up for grabs, we're going to take them too. Understood?
For hours, the marketers worked their way through the tome. Long reads out each sponsorship opportunity, then August the 3rd gives it a thumbs up or down like a Roman emperor. And with each thumbs up, the media buyers make the call to cut the sponsorship deal. They buy into college football teams, Catholic basketball tournaments, local TV sports reports, and even hydroplane races and hot air ballooning. 4 days and millions of dollars later, they leave the ballroom. Anheuser-Busch's banner will now hang over hundreds of sports teams and events. But it's not enough. In 1978, Anheuser-Busch continues losing ground to Miller. But for all its progress, Miller knows it can't catch up fully until it can brew just as much beer as Anheuser-Busch. And that's why Miller boss John Murphy's been spending hundreds of millions of dollars constructing new breweries across America. With the new breweries in the pipeline and sales rising, Murphy's feeling so confident, he's telling journalists that he already knows the date when Miller will replace Anheuser-Busch as the number one brewer. Not that he's sharing that date publicly. Anheuser-Busch knows it needs to derail the Miller locomotive, and soon. So, with the pressure on, Denny Long decides it's time to rekindle Budweiser's mojo. It's late 1978, and Long's visiting Anheuser-Busch's ad agency, Darcy, in St. Louis. He's come here to talk Budweiser. It's still America's best-selling beer, but its sales have been flat ever since Miller High Life and Light Beer took off. As the ad agency's director listens, Long spells out what it is he wants.
Budweiser is part of the fabric of American life, like Levi's and Coca-Cola. I don't accept the idea that it's had its day. We need a Budweiser campaign that celebrates blue-collar America. You know, like the Miller Time ads.
The agency's director gives Long a surprised look.
Sorry, you want to copy Miller? No, not copy. Think of it like this. They've got the right campaign, but the wrong beer. Now, we've got the right beer. We just need a stronger version of their campaign. I'm not sure about this. You risk erasing the distinction between Budweiser and High Life.
Long shrugs.
We've got the more popular beer. Now, in that scenario, it will be Miller, not us, who's struggling to stand out.
In early 1979, the new Budweiser TV ads finally arrive.
To everybody who puts in a hard day's work, this Bud's for you.
This Bud's for you. There's no one else who does it quite the way you do. So here's to you. You know it isn't only what you say, it's what you do. This Bud's for you.
Anheuser-Busch also applies the copycat strategy to the ads for its beer, Natural Light. The ads now star the same ex-athletes who used to hawk Miller Lite. At first, Miller's executives don't quite understand what's happening. They think Anheuser-Busch has run out of ideas. But as the Bud sales bubble up, the strategy becomes clear. By muddying the waters, Anheuser-Busch is robbing Miller's brands of any distinctive identity. And it's working like a charm. These campaigns are Miller killers. At the same time, Anheuser-Busch continues to spend millions to snatch sports sponsorships away from Miller. By the end of 1980, the impact is clear. Miller's years of meteoric growth are over, and Budweiser's roaring back to life on the back of its This Bud's For You campaign. For the first time in a decade, the gap between Anheuser-Busch and Miller is widening. And if Miller can't find a way to get back in the race, its chance to become number one could be gone forever. On the next episode, Miller finds hope in Tokyo. Budweiser employs a skateboarding dog, and a foreign predator stalks the beer giants.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is Business Wars, and we sure hope you enjoyed this episode. We should say something about the conversations you've been hearing in this episode. We can't know exactly what was said at the time, but this dialogue is based on our best research. I'm your host, David Brown. Tristan Donovan wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Emily Frost and Donna Hyams edited this story. Our editor and producer is Jenny Lauer Beckman. Sound design by Bay Area Sound. Our executive producer is Marshall Dewey. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.